Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I am Tim Buell, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Woohoo! Yay, yes you are. And yes. This is a reciprocal guest host because I was on Tim's show, The Golden Briefcase, last week, topping out. Is it my fourth appearance?
Fourth appearance, yeah. Record holder.
I'm quickly invading the shows.
Exactly.
I'm going to start charging.
Yes, the $50 appearance fee. Yes,
you're gonna pay me in ho hos and Twinkies.
Oh, see that I could do. I would have no problem doing that.
I'm gonna show up. I'll sometimes meet you in person. You're like, here's some ho hos.
Yeah, I believe I owe you these, and I'll just hand them to you.
Yeah, I got a collection letter from your lawyer. I owe you 17 ho hos.
Oh my gosh, that'd just be the worst. It'd be the worst.
Anyways, thanks for Tim for coming on. Of course, he's on the Golden Briefcase on firstshowing.net. Mm-hmm. And he has been on before several times.
We've had him. Yeah, this is number three, so I'm catching up to your record with us. So
is that include, because I know I had you on like for the best of the year stuff.
Ooh, that's not including that. Okay. So that would
that's
be
like 3.5.
3.5, yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah, so cool. But anyways, before we move ahead, let's talk about how you get a hold of us. You can go to fatguysinthemovies.com. You can go to iTunes, search Fat Guys in the Movies. You can go to Facebook, facebook.com/FGATM, or you can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail at 740-205-6456. Now, one of the things we don't have, we didn't have a show last week, and that is because I was out in New York City. New York City!
Nice.
Do you even get that reference? Do you get the New York City? Because you're too young.
I'm too young. Daff. Blew right over my head. I didn't even know where you were going with that.
There was an old ad for Pace Picante sauce.
Okay.
Which I think it was Pace. And it had these like cowboys sitting around a fire, and they're like, where's the salsa from? And they look on the back and say, this says it's made in New York City. New York City! And the whole thing was that I think Pace is made in Texas. So
I think it is, yeah, because I definitely know what Pace Picante is. It's good. It's delicious.
Yeah, so I still use that New York City reference, even though that like ad ran in like the 80s.
It's an icebreaker, though, because then you can just be like, yes, you know what that's from, right? And then you get to tell that story, and it's fun.
Yeah, so we did that, and we're going to be having some stuff showing up on the feed about the late-night podcast, the late-night chat room. In video podcast form and audio podcast form. So look for that on our site. And we'll also be linking it over to Fozzie Bear's site. But yeah, have you ever been to New York, Tim?
No, never have. It's something I must do as soon as I can. Yeah.
You know what I miss? When I got out of New York, I was so grateful to get back to wide open spaces and central air conditioning when I got back to Ohio. Because New York's interesting. I don't think I would want to live there, though.
Yeah, my fiance was recently there last year, and she had never been, and she loved it. But then she immediately said, I don't know if I'd live there, at least for an extended period of time. And that's, literally exactly what she said. She's like, it's hot, it's crammed, there's just a lot going on.
There's a lot of people there. There's a lot of things happening. It's cool. It's really, really neat. But it's not for me. I'm a Midwestern guy. I don't think I can live in L.A. either, for that matter, because that's just...
See, I don't even live in L.A. I live outside of L.A. I just, go down there every so often. So
I live in New Mexico, and you're almost in L.A.
Exactly.
So, anyways. Oh, we do have one thing we got to talk about. We had the Cowboys and Aliens poster giveaway, and the winner is Nicholas Gerling. I believe
Nicholas.
That's Nicholas, good job. We had some people enter the contest, but not actually follow Fat Guys Network on the Twitter, so you didn't follow the directions.
Ouch.
Would have loved to have given out this poster to you, but nope, Nicholas did the right thing. So he wins a poster of Cowboys and Aliens. He can wear it on his wall with pride or shame.
Whatever he interpreted, yeah.
Anyways, let's jump into some movies here and talk about the first films. The first one is Glee, the 3D concert movie. Glee as a movie. At a concert.
In 3D.
In 3D.
They were a class of ordinary kids.
Rachel, how do you keep your nerves from getting you on stage? You seem overwhelmed.
Who brought the world to their feet.
Why are you all standing? They haven't even done anything yet!
Save your money. This thing sucks.
Are you going to see this? I didn't see it. They didn't screen it.
I have literally no interest in seeing this. I don't follow Glee. I've seen a handful of episodes here and there because, you know what, like most decent people, I try to at least give things a try and see, is it for me? And no, it's not for me whatsoever. So I have no intention of seeing it.
I love how you quantify the worth of a person and whether they gave Glee a chance.
That's how people have been judged. And funny enough, the people that do love Glee that I'm friends with, when I told them that, I was like, I just can't get into it. It's not for me. And I wasn't even being hostile. Like, that's a retarded show. Nothing like that. They were like, oh, what? Do you have no soul? And I'm like, what? I don't understand.
Not liking Glee is equivalent to not having a soul?
Soulless being. Yeah, evidently. Wow. But these people are very extravagant about their love for Glee. So, you know what? More power to them. That's fine. I'm extravagant in my love for other things. This is certainly not one of them. So, no. To answer your question, I will not be seeing Glee, the 3D concert film.
Yeah. We'll actually go into this a little bit next week, because next week, at least scheduled, we have one of the ladies from GleeCast to talk. And so I want to get her take on the Glee movie. She wasn't going to see it in advance because they're not doing very many advanced screenings. They don't do advanced screenings for these concert movies. They did one for This Is It. But like when they did Hannah Montana and they did the Jonas Brothers and they did Justin Bieber, it was very few and far between screening. Because I think part of the thing on the thinking on that from the studios is, well, you know, the fans are already going to go see it. So why do we need critics saying one way or the other?
Exactly.
So I have no interest in it. I'm not a big Glee fan. I liked the first season. I thought the second season went way downhill. And, you know, it just looks like it's going to be another jukebox musical to me. So
you're part of the soulless club like I am.
I am a soul, but no, I earned it. I earned my loss of soul.
Fair enough.
Of course, I think I could go as far to say that certain members of the Glee cast don't have any soul either. And by soul, I mean like rhythm. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, zing, yeah. Oh. I'm with you on that one, though. Yeah, definitely. I think Glee is, and I don't mean this to be offensive, Glee is for people that wish they were musically talented, because a lot of the friends I was just referencing can't.
Glee is for stupid, untalented people.
They can't play instruments, they can't sing, but they feel like they are a part of the club because they're enjoying the show. But you know what? Again, more power to you. That's fine. I have no problem with that.
What I find interesting about Glee in terms of its message is it is this, anybody can do it, and oh, there's so much talent in the world, but the people who made it into Glee crushed everybody in their high school who would have even attempted to get into Glee. So it's this weird sort of turn upon itself.
That's weird. It's like, oh, everyone has a chance except for you untalented people. These guys are getting in. That's how it goes.
Exactly. Let's move on. This is a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it. Sure. Let's move on to Final Destination 5. Not a whole lot to say about this. More people die in creative ways in 3D.
Yep.
Authorities are calling the bridge collapse a freak act of nature.
It's natural causes?
Yeah, more like supernatural.
Death doesn't like to be cheated.
I've seen this before. A lucky few survive the disaster, and then one by one, death comes for them all.
Are you going to see this? We got a minute left.
I am going to see this. I did not like the fourth one whatsoever, but I'm a fan of the first three. My fiance is hooked on these. She loves them. So, yes, we will be trying to make a trip to the theater to see it.
The third one was awesome. I think the third one was the best.
Third one's great. Yep.
Because it kind of became self-aware and just had fun with itself. It just got ridiculous. Whereas the fourth one, it was almost like they tried to dial it back and, you know, sort of like almost tried to reboot the franchise.
And it didn't work. I think it fell on its face.
Awful. Yeah. It's so terrible. So hopefully this will be good. It's got the same director as part four, which was, of course, the Final Destination. This is the sequel.
But not really. Wink, wink. Yep.
But again, this gets a preemptive suck because the studio didn't screen this for us.
Preemptive.
So,
yep,
that's what we get to do. Anyways, I'm looking forward to Final Destination. We got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk The Help and 30 Minutes or Less.
Cool.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We have Tim Buell here from the Golden Briefcase. We're going to be talking about a couple more movies that came out this week. These are ones I've actually had a chance to see. I don't know if you
have. I have not, no, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Okay, well, let's move on. Are you a big Oprah Book Club fan?
Oh, you know. No, I'm not.
Oh, you know.
Good old classic Oprah Book Club. No.
Snap.
No, I'm not.
I don't know even. Was this actually a. I don't know if The Help was.
God, I don't even know. Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure.
Hold on, I'll ask. Was that an Oprah book, The Help? I'm asking my wife. She has no idea.
I was going to say, she should know. No, she doesn't.
She's a woman.
Yeah, is that sexist? Maybe. I don't know.
Well, no, because she was saying she wanted to read the book. My wife really wants to read the book. And I'm like, well, you're not going to get a chance to unless you buy it, because all their libraries are like at the reserved list going out the door. But anyways, they've made a movie now. And it is about a white girl in the early 1960s in Jackson, Mississippi, who profiles the African-American maids who take care of the white folks in town.
These women raise white children. We love them, and they love us, but they can't even use the toilets in our houses.
Minnie, are you in there?
You are fired!
You said to write about what disturbs me, particularly if it bothers no one else.
I'd like to write something from the point of view of the help.
I want to interview you.
No maid is ever going to tell you the truth. That's a hell of a risk to take in Jackson, Mississippi.
What are your thoughts on this? Are you at all interested?
You know what? I actually am. I've heard some really good things from fellow film critics, you know, friends that we have in this business. And a lot of people are saying they were pleasantly surprised by it. They thought it was a very sweet movie, had a lot of heart and soul in it. And I'm a big Emma Stone fan. I think she's pretty brilliant in almost everything she's been in. So in that regard, I'm very much looking forward to it. Not sure if I'm going to make it to the theater to check it out, but we'll definitely be checking it out either at one of our cheap local theaters here or on DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah. What's interesting is they released it on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm thinking, what is this? This isn't like Transformers.
No. They're hoping to make a killing this weekend.
Like $150 million opening weekend.
Yeah, that is obscure. I mean, I'm trying to remember if there was any other like films of this genre, or I guess not Transformer genre, that ever released on a Wednesday, and I can't really think of any.
They did one recently, and it escapes me what it is, but I remember it was something like this. It was this sort of either a light drama or something like that, and it came out on Wednesday, and I think they were trying to get the jump on the whatever the big event movie was on Friday.
That must be what it is. Yeah, that makes sense.
So
I guess.
Maybe even though there's really no big event movie coming out this week,
yeah, nothing too huge coming out. No,
I don't know what it's. I don't know what kind of a competition to try to avoid. But anyways, I was dreading this movie for weeks, ever since I saw the trailer for it, because it's not my kind of movie. You know, it feels, even if it wasn't an Oprah book, it felt like an Oprah
book. Sure.
So I'm like, oh, I have to sit through this. And then I go to the theater, and I look up the time as I'm getting ready to start. It's 2 hours and 17 minutes long.
Yeah, it's long.
And I just wanted to punch myself in the face. With that said, when the movie was over, the rep who happened to be sitting in the aisle right next to me, she asked, she's like, what'd you think? And I go, it was okay. And she kind of looked at me weird, and I go, and that's a glowing recommendation, because I've been dreading this thing for months. And she's like, I know, you never like anything that I like. So for that purpose, I didn't hate it. I thought it was okay. I thought it was well done. And I will give it this. It does not feel like it's 2 hours and 17 minutes
long. Oh,
that's good. It actually is paced very, very well. Has some stuff that's extraneous that they could have taken out. But then again, you get that when you adapt a movie. it's a real button pusher. It has, of course, it's going to get the audience laughing and clapping and cheering. It does everything, and at times, almost a little bit too deliberately. When I first saw it, I didn't know anything about the book. I knew it was based on a book, and I was wondering whether it was based on a true story. It's not. I mean, the woman who wrote it was raised in that era, and was raised by, like, I had heard this somewhere, that the author was raised by like a black maid.
Huh.
In sort of at similar circumstances, so it's not autobiographical, but it draws from her experiences. But it's not like there was not a book called The Help published by Anonymous in 1962 in Jackson, Mississippi, that like threw the social network into turmoil. But in a way, it's almost less impressive because it's not based on a true story.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that definitely.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's like, oh, that's just a work of fiction.
You're just making stuff up now.
Yeah, how dare you? not to belittle it, but don't think it's a true story and then be like, oh, that's really happened. It didn't. And it draws from her experiences. My biggest complaint is there's a couple problems I have with it. One of it is it's incredibly heavy-handed at times. Mm. And it goes to like Viola Davis, who I think is a good actor, but I don't like her because she always plays like this stoic character who's got this internal turmoil. I'm like, do a wacky comedy for crying out loud. Show us you can actually stretch. You can stand there and look brooding and you can cry on cue, but can you do anything other than that? I mean, it's weird because to sit there and say you do all these Oscar type movies, which I mean some, but you know, you do all these serious performances. Can you do goofy? Can you do fun? Can you do, could you be like Jeffrey Rush, who can play in The King's Speech, but also play Casanova Frankenstein in Mystery
Man? Sure. Yeah.
That's what I consider a great actor. So I'm still not sold on Viola Davis. The other thing is it does kind of have this shaking its fingers, shamed. It's like to the white audience, shame on you.
Shame on your ancestors. Yep.
Shame on you. And when you really look at it, the sort of the bad guys in this movie being the white women that are sort of controlling society in Jackson, Mississippi, they're in the minority themselves. Most people who lived in Jackson, Mississippi in the 60s were not wealthy enough to have a maid.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
So that kind of that bothers me, and it's like I have no idea what it's like to be black. I have no idea what it's like to be black in Jackson, Mississippi before the civil rights movement. I just don't know.
If you did, so, I would laugh pretty hard. If you're like, well, I know what it's like, and that's not what it's like.
I was born a poor black child. But so there's, and then there's this also this there's another sort of shame on you for letting these African-American women raise your children for you. And it's kind of Hollywood shaming us, where I'm like, kind of like, that's kind of the mecca for nannies, isn't it? I mean, doesn't everybody, and it's like, and they're like, oh, shame on you for having the African-Americans being in a subservient level of society. I'm like, I'll bet you a Mexican mows Emma Stone's grass.
I guarantee it.
And does that make me racist? I don't know.
I think it's a safe assumption.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of like, I would bet that a Mexican mows Viola Davis's grass.
I guarantee that as well. You're just calling it how it is, Kevin. That's all there is to it. I don't think you're in the wrong at all.
Yeah, I don't know if that's offensive to people, but I do. It puts itself on such a pedestal, and then you have to sit there and be like, okay. Yeah, you guys are nannying your kids. It's just you're not racist about it, apparently.
Exactly.
But when all said and done, I say that this does kind of rock. It actually is surprisingly good for what I thought it
was. That's good. It's good to hear.
So, yeah. Anyways, any complaints, please send them to fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com.
You're going to get a lot of racist emails. People are saying, like, yeah, people, Kevin's a racist, and that Tim guy, too.
Yeah. So, the next movie, 30 minutes or less, Jesse Eisenberg plays a slacker who's forced to mastermind a bank robbery.
Hello.
Hello, pizza boy.
Oh, it's a great mask. Ah, another one.
The missing link.
That's very nice.
Get him!
Whoa. Yo, dude, just take the pizza. Two guys in masks strapped me and strapped a bomb to my chest, and now I have less than 9 hours to rob a bank.
And your first thought was to come to a school filled with young children?
Don't make a big deal out of it, all right?
Painting the guns for the bank robbery. Because if we go in with our plastic guns, then the cops will shoot us in our face.
You going to see this
one? Yes, I am going to see this one. It's the, you know, the classic sort of conundrum of, oh, this is something you never think would happen, and it happens. I mean, for people that don't know, he's a pizza boy, gets high on the job and stuff, and basically two criminals.
Because that never happens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and two criminals strap a bomb to his chest, and they send him to rob a bank for them. It's kind of, it's a funny concept, and I think in the right hands here, we got Ruben Fleischer, director of Zombieland, doing this. I think it could end up being really funny.
Yeah. Now, here's my take on it.
Go for it.
I'm tired of Jesse Eisenberg already. I am, because, you know, he just plays the same character. Like, in Social Network, he was like Jesse. In Social Network, he was Jesse Eisenberg as a jerk.
Yes.
And in Zombieland, he was Jesse Eisenberg with zombies. And this one, he's just Jesse Eisenberg, who cries a lot and has a crappy life. So, I don't think he's that great of an actor. I think he's very one-note, very much like Viola Davis.
He probably has a Mexican mow his lawn, too. You know,
I'm sure he does. Aziz Ansari is very funny in it. He plays sort of his sidekick, and I like him anyways, but I see people getting annoyed with him as well.
Yeah.
Danny McBride's in it, and he is okay. My biggest problem with this movie is everything's sort of like mean-spirited.
Hmm.
Is the best way to put it. Sort of like Observe and Report,
yep,
which I hate. Absolutely hated that movie.
I love Observe and Report, so this might be my cup of tea. Who knows?
Then you're going to love 30 Minutes. That's what I said to people. I'm like, if you like that, like this one, because everybody's kind of a jerk. And then part of the problem is it tries to sort of like work things out, and you're like, well, that wouldn't actually happen ever. That's no way. So it I don't know. For me, it kind of sucks.
Oh, man. Now you brought me down.
Jesse Eisenberg. do a wackety schmackety comedy with Viola Davis and get back to me. We got to go to a break.
Sounds good.
Hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, if you're still listening.
Hopefully, right?
If we haven't offended you away, we are now ready to do the middle segment. Box office winners, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Wolfman Jack.
Should I do my Wolfman? Rise of the Planet of the Apes, because this is Wolfman Jack telling you, Rise of the Planet of the Apes wins the box office. $54.8 million.
Yeah. And I was very pleased to see that. I'm glad it did so well over the weekend.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
We didn't actually review it on Fat Guys because we had a bye last week because we were going out to New York. So we didn't actually get a chance to talk about it. So let's talk about it now. You talk about the movie. What do you think?
Yeah, man. I honestly was in the apprehensive bunch. I really love the original films, the classics, the Heston ones. I really hate Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes. And so when they said they were going to reboot it and kind of, do a little prequel, I was very apprehensive, especially when they said, hey, we're doing digital apes. We're not doing makeup. I'm a big practical effects guy. As much as I adore the art of CGI, I don't think it's completely where we want it to, so we get that photorealistic effect. I mean, we're getting there with certain films or certain elements of movies, but I was very, very nervous about the apes, and Weta was handling them, so that was obviously a quick vote of confidence on my part. I was like, okay, well, Weta's really great. They've done fantastic work on Lord of the Rings, Avatar, other stuff like that, so I decided to wait. I was at Comic-Con a couple weeks ago, and they showed a few more clips that we hadn't seen in the trailers, and these were finished ape shots, finished effects, and they were pretty mind-blowing, and they looked really good. I mean, obviously, you're still going to get that weird uncanny valley where it's not exactly correct, but it's to the point where my brain never once was like, oh, okay, this is stupid. I never checked out. I believed what I was seeing on screen, and that just goes for the visuals. The story has a lot of heart. There's quite a few emotional moments in the movie. I was surprised. Yeah. There was parts where I got a little choked up. I was like, this is sad. Yeah, and wiping my tears away in the theater. Now, you've got fantastic work here from basically everyone involved. Andy Serkis playing Caesar, the lead ape. Just some really wonderful character work of a human playing an animal, and he's done it before, obviously, with all his other motion capture characters. But this one, I think we really did see Serkis coming to life just with basically monkey makeup on. I mean, that's what I saw. There was a few moments in particular where it creeped me out that Caesar had Andy Serkis's eyes, and like, it just looked really weird. But at the same time, very believable. So that being said, the last half of the movie is a blast. It's got some really fantastic ape action sequences, just some really cool kind of, we're talking about wagging your finger at the audience, like, shame on you humans for abusing animals and being rude and all that stuff. So that worked really well for me. I took the fiance to see it. She's terrified of apes. She hates them. She thinks they're
scared of apes.
Yeah, she's been scared of apes, and I was like, okay, well, you might like apes, but then you're gonna hate them again because they're gonna take over, and that didn't make her feel better. But she
did
enjoyed
go running
it.
Out of the did she flailing
screaming,
her arms
running out of the theater. Yeah, no, she really loved it. She thought it was great. She got emotional at parts too. She said that it was not what she expected, and she really enjoyed it too. So
let's talk more about how terrified she is of apes. Do you like go to the zoo, and does she like not go to like the
that's the funny thing. We go to the zoo a lot. We're kind of zoo junkies. We go to zoos at least once or twice every couple months. Just we got a lot down here in Southern California, so, and she's not scared of them. She'll sit there for 10 minutes and watch an ape, and then she won't watch a movie about apes. So I'm like, what are you out of your mind? Is that, are you okay?
I knew somebody once who wouldn't watch a movie with boats because they were so terrified of the water.
Oh gosh.
And I'm like, you do? And this is like before high def TVs even, so it's like, I'm like, we're watching something on like this 30 inch tube TV, and I'm like, you do realize that that's fake.
It's not even, it doesn't even look real.
There is not water in that TV at all.
Oh, that's amazing. But like I said, she surprisingly really enjoyed the movie, and I felt good afterwards because I felt that the film was good enough to convert someone who was terrified of apes to feel some sympathy towards them. But you were on our show last week, and you had a lot of love for the movie too.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic. And when I went on the radio and I was talking about it, of course I blurred, but I'd be like, James Franco plays a brilliant scientist. Okay, just go with me on this one. So that wasn't terribly believable, or the fact that there's just this like wicked hot model looking zoologist in the zoo.
Yeah, that never happens. Jeez.
And she's like, oh, okay, I'll go on a date, because nobody is interested at all in me. The human element wasn't that great, but
that'd apes, be my one complaint. Yeah,
the apes were. Now, am I correct in? I heard that there were no apes at all in this movie.
No, to my knowledge, they're all digital. Yeah, to
even my like just every single shot of an ape.
Yeah, I mean, and I what I remember is just that they were claiming, well, we're going to save so much money on animal trainers, and we, you know, it's also going to save us time shooting it. And allegedly, a lot of the sequences in the kind of ape sanctuary, like, it was just everything was CGI. Like, there was no elements of reality in there whatsoever. And, you know, once I read that, you fooled me. It looked real to me, and there's a lot of that stuff. And I guess that was their sort of, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to just do everything digital. And I think it worked. I personally think it works.
And that worked, whereas, like, if you watch, like, Jumanji, there's no real apes in Jumanji, but... That's not a surprise.
No, exactly.
Because those monkeys do not look at all.
No really. Shock there. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I think that's pretty impressive, because I even thought that some of them were like the orangutan. I thought was a animatronic.
Yeah, that he was creepy real. There was moments where I was looking into his eyes and some shots. And I'm like, oh, there's no way it's fake. Yep, he's fake. Because then you see that one moment where you're like, oh, okay, that looks CG, but it was very, very hard to pick out. If they used any real apes, it was masked so well against the CGI apes, I didn't know. And I usually have a pretty keen eye for that stuff, so I'm not sure. Yeah.
The only apes they really used were humans. Because humans are, of course, apes as well. You know, James Franco.
Yeah, specifically.
Flailing his arm, flinging his poo at the camera. That was a little bit crazy.
That was a little weird. Yeah. That's the post-credit sequence, by the way. You guys got to check that out.
Yeah, he did that in the Oscars, too. It was just awkward to do it a second time.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the Smurfs came in second. There were no apes in the Smurfs either, unfortunately. That movie. And it's greenlit a sequel already. They already have a sequel.
Yeah, they wasted no time with that one. They got right into it.
Cowboys and Aliens came in next, which beat The Changeup, which I actually kind of like The Changeup.
I didn't get to it. No, I heard so many mixed things. It was like, I don't know if I want to waste the money, because I might hate it. So
it's not great. But it's not awful. It actually has some very funny moments in it, and partly you have to like Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like them, sort of like if 30 minutes or less, you kind of have to like Jesse Eisenberg and Danny McBride. And if you don't, there's no way you're ever gonna like that.
So. Gotcha.
Anywho, what do you think is going to win this weekend?
The Help. No, actually, I'm not quite sure what's going to win this weekend.
I'm putting my money on The Help.
Yeah, you think so? Yeah. I'd like to see something like that take the weekend. I think 30 minutes or less is really going to appeal to the younger crowd, the comedy lovers out there. So that might be a strong contender. I would like to see The Help win, though. I would.
I think The Help's going to win. I think Glee, the 3D is going to hurt Glee, because I think it's only going to get the fans. And the fact that it's a current TV show and it's just a concert movie. There's nothing else to see other than that. If you see, people have, there's no like new thing of saying, ooh, 3D. Everybody's been seeing the 3D. I think most people have seen those. So the novelty's gone. And then to see a concert movie, it's just, I predicted this was going to be an epic fail from when it started. So
yeah, I'm with you. I don't see that doing well at all.
And Final Destination 5. I don't know. Final Destination 4 didn't do that well. So
No, it didn't. And that's what I'm thinking. That's what's really going to hurt the chances for 5, because, again, if anyone does their research and sees that it's the same director, they might immediately tune out and not want to check it out.
Yeah, so. And then I think 30 minutes or less is going to be limited because of its...
It's got an R rating, right?
It's an R-rated film. Yeah. And while they've been doing well, stuff like... you know, of course, Horrible Bosses and The Hangover 2 have all done very well this summer. 30 minutes, there's nobody really to hinge at that on. And there's, you know, I mean, you got Jesse Eisenberg, but he doesn't carry a movie. I mean, people don't see a movie for him. And everybody else is secondary. So I honestly think it's going to be The Help. The only thing that'll hurt it if it kind of shoots its wad on Wednesday and Thursday and doesn't get the... But I don't think it will. I think it's going to have these middling... And then it's just going to be this nice, steady thing. Plus, you know what? Tyler Perry came out this week and, like, endorsed it in this weird sort of I'm okay with it. Like, you need Tyler Perry's approval.
He's like, this is my genre, but yeah, go ahead. That's what he basically said.
This is about black people. I approve. I mean, it was the weirdest story to come out of. Just like, why would you? Anyways, but no, I think it will, because it's a crowd pleaser. And
good
for an August movie. This I think, you know, you're still good. It's the adult, not the adult, but the grown up movie that a lot of grown ups are going to see. And it's got a lot of buzz. I mean, people went nuts when I saw this movie.
Correct. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm putting my money on The Help.
Man, you know what? I'll go with you on that one. That sounds very plausible to me.
Yeah. So, let's move. Is there anything else you want to talk about? Anything else that's happened this week that you want to heat up?
I don't think so. Topics? Yeah. This week, I mean, in terms of releases, nothing huge that I was really looking forward to. I mean, aside from 30 Minutes or Less, but that's not like my most anticipated film or anything. So, no, nothing really tickling my fancy this week too much.
No news stories. That's like any, like you don't have a weigh in on Catwoman's costume or Jason Momoa.
I'm holding back on that one, man. I don't have much to say. I will say though, I did. I talked about this on Golden Briefcase last night. I did finally see Attack the Block this past week.
Yeah, what'd you think?
And really loved it. Thought it was a blast. It's good. Good times.
I'm terrified that Attack the Block, I'll finally see it and I'll be like, yeah, it was okay.
You know, you're gonna be in Jeremy's camp because he liked it. He didn't love it though. So, but he respects those that love it. You know, he gets the love that the film is getting. I think for me, it had been blown up a lot, so I was really apprehensive about that. But I came out on top, really, really enjoying it. So,
watch it. That's what I'm concerned about, because it's getting so much buzz in the small community.
Yep.
So we'll see. I don't know, but no comment. You don't want to weigh in on the Dirty Dancing remake?
Oh, as much as I want to now. These dancing film remakes are just, you know, whatever. They're gonna come and go quick.
This is what I think. If Footloose comes out and tanks hard, you won't see another word from this Dirty Dancing remake.
Nope, not at all. Yeah, hey, but speaking of Footloose though, a lot of positive buzz for that too. Like, people are saying it's good. So I don't know what to think. I think so too. It looks terrible. It looks wretched, and I'm like, oh, really? How can
the original Footloose is good? I mean, I loved the original Footloose, but this one just looks so. This looks like the CW TV movie version of it.
Exactly. Took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, it just looks very like schlocky, just not that, not good.
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen. Anyways, let's move on to the Fat Guy 5, and in honor of 30 Minutes or Less, we've got our 5 favorite heist films. So let's you can start with the first one if you want to, or I can do that one.
The first one on our list here was the Ocean's films. I got Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. Classic heist films, I think, especially for the later generations here. The younger kids really love these ones. And those, we were speaking of ratings a minute ago, those all had PG-13 ratings too. So they obviously made a pretty decent killing at the box office. And to my knowledge, they've been doing pretty well on home video since they've come out too. And I think that's just always kind of a fun ensemble sort of comedy slash heist film that people always go to. I really enjoy almost all the Ocean's films. I don't like 13 as much as the other ones, but they're all still definitely worth your watch, and got some good heist sequences too.
I like 13. I like 12 a lot. The only problem with 12 is they overplayed the Julia Roberts thing.
Yes, they did, definitely.
And it's also worthy to go back to watch the original Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
With the Rat Pack, which I think came out about a year or two ago on Blu-ray. So
Blu-ray release, yeah.
You can get that. It looks pretty good on Blu-ray. Not perfect, but there you go. It's old Vegas.
Old Vegas.
You know what's funny? You mentioned PG-13. I got a little topic there on this.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I saw on Twitter today, people are just bitching about PG-13.
Yep.
Like it came in and punched their dog. What is going on?
I saw a few people. That's what I'm seeing it from. A lot of the people I follow on Twitter were complaining that who was it? Someone, I think Guillermo del Toro recently came out and said something about it. He said it basically, from what I gathered, he saw it as like a security blanket, just like, oh, it's safe and you're gonna make money and you don't. It's especially for something like Shark Knight, which it looks to be like it's trying really hard to be Piranha. You know, it's trying to be a racy, fun, you know, creature horror film, and then you got to slap a PG-13 rating on it. That disavows anything that movie had going for it in terms of what I just listed. So it's weird that we're getting a lot more PG-13 now, especially where these R-rated films are doing so well. We were just talking about some of the comedies from this past summer. It's odd to me that studios and directors alike are aiming for the PG-13. It just seems weird. It's you know, forgive my French, but it's like lack of balls. You're just not trying. To me, if I was making Shark Knight 3D, you better believe I'd be trying to go for that R rating. I'd be making that thing as gory and nasty as possible. But no, they're not.
Well, but they did that with Piranha, and Piranha was a disappointment.
Yes, but critically, we all liked it. You
loved
enjoyed
Piranha.
It. Yeah.
I thought it was fun, but it didn't do well.
No, it did not do well. So, and I think that's, again, that's where it's coming from. They're worried. They're really worried about the returns. And to be completely fair and honest, that's obviously a very valid point. They want to make the best return on their investment. And yeah, that's fine. I think it's always a gamble, though, because you could throw an R rating on that. And who knows? If it's good enough, it still might bring in quite a bit of money. But again, they always look to the past and they see what's worked and hasn't worked in the past and, of course, apply it to their current actions. So,
well, if you go by the granddaddy of all shark movies, Jaws was PG. I mean, it was before PG-13, but it was still a solid PG movie. It would be rated PG-13 now.
Yes. Yes, it would. And see, but that one, obviously, the argument is, oh, the filmmaking was so good that, you know, there was so much terror and you didn't have to show all the gore. And I agree with that. I think that film is a great example of scaring you with what they don't show you. And I think...
But Jaws 2 was a piece of shit.
Exactly. Jaws 2 is terrible. Yeah, it's terrible. And
did very, very well, and it's got huge critical acclaim.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did not know that until recently when I watched it and I just did a little research. I was like, really? Mm-hmm. Weird. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what's your take on the whole PG-13 thing?
You know what? I think people need to make movies for what they're supposed to be.
Sure.
You know, I remember when True Grit came out last year. There were some people who were like, going, why is this rated PG? Because I think it got a PG rating. It didn't even get PG-13.
Yeah, I think it was PG, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, it's a shoot-em-up movie. I'm like, well, the original was rated G, first of all.
Yep.
I think the Coen brothers made their movie and just submitted it to the rating board, and whatever they got, they got. And I think that's how you should make a movie. But here's the thing. You also have to look at it from the business standpoint. When people are making a movie like Shark Night, they're not making Shark Night for fans of horror cinema who write for 5 different websites and do podcasts and that sort of thing and are active on Twitter. They make Shark Night for the teenagers that are going to go see it. Outside of that, like, 13 to 21, 22-year-old that are going to talk through the movie and kick your seat and text through the movie, that's who they're going for. Hmm. So why cut out half your audience by dealing with an R rating?
That's true.
And I mean, while I would love to see a brutal, visceral, gory Shark Night, I totally understand why they're doing it. I don't blame them. You know, it's kind of like when Guillermo del Toro was supposed to do the Mountains of Madness and then Universal said, we're not going to spend $200 million because it'll be R-rated and blah, blah, blah. That was a good business decision on Universal's part. That
would have
been, you know, it's like when they made Watchmen and they're like, we're going to make a superhero movie. Wait, it's going to be rated R. It has rape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this a dog eats a kid and people blow up into blood. It's an R-rated movie. And consequently, I think R-rated movies can do well, but they have to be appropriate.
Definitely.
And so Shark Night kind of falls between that, you know. Is it going to be a schlocky piranha movie or is it going to be a slasher movie? But I don't know. I mean, even then, Friday the 13th, it did so well its opening weekend. It dropped 70-some%, and that partly may have been because of the R rating. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess for me, the bringing up Shark Night, I guess the issue I have is what they're presenting it as is a horror movie. It's a creature horror movie. And every one of those I've seen that's been good has been rated R. And it comes off as almost very awkward because you're looking to go see a gory fun time and you're probably going to get maybe one or two, you know, limbs ripped off with no gory results or something like that. I don't know. I haven't seen the film, so I'm not sure. It might be a hard PG-13. But it's just weird how you're presenting it as a creature feature that looks to be piranha-esque and you're slapping a PG-13 on. I don't know.
Whereas if you take, like, Cursed, did you see Cursed, the Wes Craven film?
Yeah, yeah.
That one, he shot it to be R-rated, and then, like, oh, yeah, hey, we need a PG-13. He's like, what am I going to do? It's kind of choppy and weird. I still thought it was funny, but the unrated version is vastly different. It's
definitely
way gorier.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I only saw the unrated version, so I was thinking, like, oh, yeah, this has this going for it.
There's a scene in her dream where she rips Joshua Jackson's head off, and just a geyser of blood shoots up. they cut before she rips her head off, so you just see her teeth.
Yeah.
It's just very soft, you know, so I think, at that one, I'm like, he made it to be R, it should have been R, but I don't know, I guess part of the thing with, like, Shark Night is, did you see Prom Night?
The slasher one?
Well, the remake, yeah, a couple years ago.
No, I never saw it. No.
I thought that actually was a pretty decent movie. Yeah, it was it was the evil PG-ification of Hollywood, but I thought it was actually relatively well, and then the restraints made it pretty scary, or suspenseful at least. It was very different from Prom Night. You didn't have a guy getting his head cut off after having sex, and you didn't have nudity, but sometimes those films don't do that well. Those films do well on a video market.
Sure.
But I don't think they do as well nowadays. It's not like, see, because back in the 80s, the only chance you had to see tits on the screen was to go to the theater and watch Friday the 13th. Now you can just a couple clicks of the mouse, boom, you got tits on screen.
You got it.
Famous people.
Yep.
Like
it's easy. I was going to correct you too because I don't want you getting angry emails. Trigger, it was actually rated PG-13, and it was for, I have it right here. It's intense sequences of Western violence, including disturbing images. And I went back and thought about it like while we were chatting. They do have that one like headshot sequence, and there is some visceral, you know,
cuts
shots.
Off his
fingers. Yeah. There's a little bit, but. That being said, I thought it was a soft PG-13 for sure. There was not too much going for it on that. So,
yeah. All right. Second one in the favorite heist films. We got off on a little tangent.
Yeah, we did.
A Fish Called Wanda.
Yes.
Which a lot of people forget, but that's a great movie.
It's awesome. Yeah.
It stars Python's John Cleese and Michael Palin in this really wacky, weird story about these people that are trying to steal some stuff, but it's funny as a heist film, but it's funnier just the interactions of the characters. John Cleese is brilliant. Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Kline, Michael Palin. It's a dark comedy, but unlike like 30 Minutes or Less, what I didn't like, these characters, you just like these characters.
Yeah, we were talking about heist films, bank heist films in particular on Golden Briefcase last night, and that was one of the things we kept bringing up is the ones that we love the most have the best character work. And yeah, if you just have despicable characters, it's kind of, you want them to get their comeuppance, you know, you kind of like, yeah, just get them caught. I don't care. Like, take them away. But yeah, if you have fun characters where you're almost confused in your head, in your subconscious, oh, wait, these are bad guys. I shouldn't be rooting for them, but you can't help it because they're so likable or they have certain qualities that appeal to you. That's a more interesting heist film, and A Fish Called Wanda is a perfect example of that.
Definitely. Next one. You want to hit the next one?
Yeah, next one is Gone in 60 Seconds. Now, were you talking about the remake or the original film or both?
I've never seen the original, so yeah, I don't know how good that is. Have you?
I've seen the original. The original is quite good. It's a different movie than the Nick Cage reboot of it. Part of me still really loves the Nick Cage version just because I'm a Cage fanatic. I think he's great in everything, regardless of how terrible he is in it.
He's great in everything, including The Wicker Man.
Yes. Yeah, we're huge Nick Cage junkies over on Golden Briefcase. I believe we coined the term going full Cage, which is when he just flips his lid and goes nuts. And
What happened to the girl?
What happened to her? Yeah, exactly. You would know where we're going with
that. We just watched Wicker Man. We just live tweeted Wicker Man.
Oh, yes, I saw that. Yeah, I saw you guys were doing that. Yeah, Wicker Man is all sorts of insanity and fun, and it's great. But no, Gone in 60 Seconds, the remake, it's fun. It's a car heist film, which, you know, it's obviously a specific subgenre of the heist film genre. And in that regard, it's fun. There's sexy cars. You've got Angelina Jolie. You've got a fun cast. It works. I don't hate it at all. I have a lot of colleagues that think it's just trash, but I still find great enjoyment
awesome
from watching
trash.
It.
It's like White Castle.
It is, exactly. Good
it's
comparison.
It's just awful, bad for you. It'll make you feel bad in the morning. It'll give you a stomach ache, and you'll have diarrhea. But it's a fun movie.
What if we could get those bodily functions from bad movies? Like, you went and saw something, it was so bad you were physically ill, like when you came home.
Trust me, I'm pretty sure it's happened at times.
It's gotta have happened.
Although I did almost throw up during Blair Witch.
Well, yeah, that's probably a different.
But I was so stupid because I like got a big thing of popcorn and a big icy, and I like sat in the front row.
Oh boy, yeah,
bad. And then I just was like, bah. And then when I saw United 93, which was a fantastic, beautiful movie.
Mm-hmm.
The rep was there, and she had she left and threw up because
it's
all shaky.
All the shaky cam, yep.
And I'm like, well, that's bad. That's the bad side when the rep throws up.
Oh gosh.
but it was a great movie.
Yeah. Are you a fan of Gone in 60 Seconds?
I do. I love just that. It's one of those balls to the wall action movies at work, and it's basically Dominic Senna does with that movie. He takes the Jerry Bruckheimer mold. Yep. And he does what Michael Bay should do with his characters.
Yeah. That's definitely
fair to
say.
He doesn't let the action overpower the characters. And I thought, I mean, they're terrible characters. Again, they're White Castle characters. But they're fun to watch.
They are fun. Yep.
So, next one, The Sting. I put this on there. I have to be honest. I haven't seen The Sting in probably decades. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but it's a very classic heist film.
Yes.
And I just have to put it out there out of respect for it, because I remember seeing it as a kid and really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this is a great, you know, it's a Paul Newman, Robert Redford. It's directed by George Roy Hill. I actually saw this couple years ago, and it's got some really fun sort of, it's divided into seven sections, and they have little title cards and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And for me, that pieced it together a lot like a play, and I enjoy movies that play as plays. Sorry, yeah. Double word there. But it works very well, and again, we have characters that we like and that we enjoy seeing do their job. And it's a lot of fun. I cannot recommend this enough. It's actually on Netflix Instant now, so Ooh. People should definitely check that out. And like a lot of the older movies, it doesn't look amazing on Netflix, but it's entirely watchable. So
awesome. And the last one, which is sort of one a lot of people don't think of as a heist film, and that's Inception.
Yes. Last year's Inception.
And it's because it's a heist, because they're maybe not stealing gold or money, they're stealing thought.
Yes, and for me, the reason I love Inception so much as a heist film is because it's so different. We haven't seen this before, and not that I want to see this again, but I would love to see different varieties of heist films. I mean, we were just talking about car heists and stuff like that. That's, I guess, kind of a primitive way of doing things differently, but something like that where you're thinking, oh, they're stealing thoughts and ideas and stuff like that, that's just brilliant to me. And obviously, you know, from the mind of Chris Nolan, you can expect something like this. And some of the you know, quote-unquote heist sequences in that movie, the whole first, you know, 15 minutes of the film is a heist, and very exhilarating. I still remember when I saw it, I went to a midnight show of it, and I remember kind of just being on the edge of my seat the whole entire first sequence. And it's also, it acts as a good exposition too, to kind of, this is what we do and here's how we do it. It's very exciting.
Well, and what works as a heist film is it has all the elements of the heist film. They've got, this is the person who's the expert on this, and this is the person who's they have the ragtag group of people that each have their thing to do. This is the safecracker, only instead of a safecracker, it's Ellen Page who can create the world.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the guy who creates the drug to make us go in there, but this is actually equivalent to the car guy from the movie, the getaway guy. So yeah, it's looking good. And until, you know, Tower Heist comes out, later this year with Gabby Sabidi and Eddie Murphy.
Exactly.
this is what we have to fall back on.
Exactly. Yep.
I'm terrified because I'm probably going to love Tower Heist.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Kevin, when I saw the trailer for that, I thought in my head, Kevin Carr is going to dig this movie. And you know what? That's fine. I want you to dig it.
I have this bizarre love for Brett Ratner's movies that I hate Brett Ratner. I think he's a dick. Everything I've seen of him, I just want to kick him in the nuts.
It's like, I hate you, man.
I hate you, but God, I think your movies are awesome.
Well, that makes one of us, because I certainly don't. I can't stand anything he touches, usually. Yeah. Actually, to be fair, I actually do like Red Dragon, and I know a lot of people don't like Red Dragon. I think it's still fun.
He's like Rennie Harlan. Only at least Rennie Harlan looks like a nice guy. He seems to be like a decent, but Brett Rattler's, you see him, he's like, he's like this chubby guy who gets hot chicks and no reason he should ever be getting hot chicks.
I picture him like doing, you know, his behind the scenes commentaries and stuff, and he's just like eating fried chicken or something like that. Like, well, for this scene,
or just the skin.
Oh gosh, yeah, just the crispy skin, just nomming on it.
Let's get rid of the meat and the bone. Let me get the skin. Trans fat, please.
It makes me feel dirty just thinking about him. Like, Brett Ratner, get away from me.
He is a White Castle.
Oh my goodness,
sitting on
yes.
your plate for like 10 days, where it's like sort of like the grease has sunken into the bread on the bottom and sort of solidified into that gelatinous jelly. Greasy. And it's cold and it smells.
It kills me, but you're absolutely correct.
On that thought, we have an honorable mention, The Usual Suspects, because even though it's a bit of a heist film, it's not a traditional heist film, and so we took it off the list because I couldn't count when I put six.
And then I couldn't count when I questioned what we were replacing it with.
Yeah, like three times. Like, what are we doing? What happened to the girl? What happened to the girl?
Got to go Full Cage again. Yep. Right. Got to bring it back.
Well, we're done doing Full Cage, and we will come back and do DVDs.
Sounds good.
Back to Fat Guys in the Movies with Tim Buell from the Golden Briefcase. Going Full Cage on everybody.
Yep. Full Cage.
For those listening in the radio, that's a reference to Nicolas Cage in our middle segment. You'll have to go back and listen to it. We're actually not too offensive.
No, we're fine in the middle segment. I think we're good.
Shame on you, Tim, for bringing up the quality of this show.
It's my fault. I apologize.
anyways, we have what's coming up next.
Oh, this is the DVD roundup. World famous DVD roundup, I need to say. Yes.
Sorry. I had to pull the wit back there for a second.
Yeah, you started, went for it, and then you pulled it back again. Yep.
That's right. So, would you want to go ahead and talk about the ones that you've got?
Yeah. We had a few new releases that came out this past week, and we do a similar segment on my show, and I had to unfortunately sit out for most of it because I didn't see the new stuff. We had a couple things like Paul and whatnot. I think you're going to talk about those. A few re-releases that came out on Blu-ray I did want to mention, one of which is Battle of Algiers, a classic film. It's on the Criterion Collection. This is usually mandatory viewing for film students, and for good reasons too. It's a gorgeous film. It's 1966. It's directed by Gio Pontecorvo. Yeah, that's his name. Can never remember how to pronounce that. And beautiful movie, and it's very solemn in tone. The thing is shot gorgeously though, and I think everyone, if you haven't seen Battle of Algiers, you must seek it out immediately. It's an extraordinary piece of cinema history, and again, I had to watch it in every film class I've ever taken, so I've been inundated with it. This is definitely something I'm picking up. Are you a fan of Battle of Algiers, Kevin?
I haven't seen it, although I do hear it's as important to watch for film students as Norbit. I'm just kidding. There are giant gaps in my sort of film theory. I never went to film school, so he's never required to watch a lot of stuff.
Yeah. No, I you specifically check it out because you've got some great stuff there. It's got a score by Ennio Morricone too, so obviously some legendary work there. And from what I know of the Blu-ray, our friends over at Criterion Cast can probably give you a little bit more information on it. But Blu-ray is probably gorgeous looking, though those prints are usually well handled, and I definitely recommend everyone checks that one out. Awesome. And then two other re-releases I had, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, hitting Blu-ray, classic film, classic kind of original stoner comedy, if you will. The next two are kind of, the next one I'm talking about is a stoner comedy.
You get
comedy
to see
as well.
Phoebe Cates' boobs.
Yes,
in that movie.
Yes, you do. And I remember I hadn't seen it in years, and I watched it with the fiance's dad and her stepmother, and she had never seen it. And when that scene showed up, she did this like gasp, but I was like, creepy little
That's
giggle,
right.
Yeah. But now, Fast Times is a classic flick. You've got Sean Penn, obviously one of his most iconic roles, and he's hilarious. And everyone else involved, you got Judge Reinhold as an awkward teenager, and it's classic. Yeah, but that one's directed by Amy Heckerling, and definitely should check that out. If you haven't seen Fast Times at this point, what are you waiting for? Check it out on Blu-ray. And then the other stoner comedy that's hitting Blu-ray this week is Dazed and Confused, the Richard Linklater film. This one I'm hesitant to pick up because I recently, last Black Friday, I got the Criterion 2-disc like DVD collection for like $6, like brand new on Amazon. So I'm like, I don't know if I want to double dip again. So I may not pick it up, but the Blu-ray is allegedly some fantastic quality. So I would say if you haven't seen the film, check it out in a beautiful format on Blu-ray.
I'll do. Let's hit the more recent ones that I've got. There's Paul, which is of course Simon Pegg and Nick Frost going to Comic-Con and picking up an alien in the middle of Nevada desert, played by Seth Rogen. This plays better on video. I was sort of on it when I saw it on theaters. Actually had a lot of fun watching it on Blu-ray. It's actually a pretty funny movie. Your Highness is also out. James Franco not playing a brilliant scientist. He plays a sort of a stoner knight, and his brother Danny McBride. Is also a stoner knight. The only biggest reason to see this one is Natalie Portman is wicked hot in this movie. She looks like better than in any other movie she's ever been in. So there you go. There's also Mars Needs Moms, which is based on a Shel Silverstein book and done mocap by Robert Zemeckis. It's okay. It's not deserving of the hate that it got and the low box office. It's a nice little throwaway thing to watch with your kids, although it does have some pretty heavy duty stuff in it. And there's also Jumping the Broom, which was sort of one of my favorite surprise comedies.
Yeah, that's right.
Of the summer. It's this sort of upstairs downstairs families getting married, you know, the rich folks and the poor folks having to come together and work out their differences. Actually surprisingly funny and enjoyable. There's also Fox and the Hound 1 and 2 double disc on Blu-ray from Disney. So Disney's got a couple things to come check out this week.
I must confess, Kevin, nothing made me weep harder as a child than Fox and the Hound.
Fox and the Hound's a good movie.
It was, you know, so what's that?
Do you know who's in it?
Oh gosh.
Isn't like Kurt Russell plays one of them.
Oh, that's right. He does.
Yeah. He plays the older version.
The older version, yeah.
This is one of the last ones that had Don Bluth involved in it.
Yes, that's true.
He went on to do like American Tail and stuff like that for other studios when he got fed up with Disney.
Yeah.
So, the dark days of the 80s.
Yep.
Stinker of the week. There's really nothing that's terrible, terrible stinker. So I'm just going to throw in Yo Gabba Gabba makes music makes me move. Have you ever watched Yo Gabba Gabba? You don't.
Yes.
Have kids.
Yeah. I've seen it. I not by choice. It was on a TV and I happened to be like, what is this? And yeah. I had to watch. It was a train wreck. I had to watch it. You know.
It will make your brain melt. Yes. It is the most bizarre. It makes the Teletubbies look like NPR.
Mm-hmm.
It is so bizarre. So I guess kids like it. But anyways, we got to wrap up. Review wrap up. We've got Glee 3D and Final Destination 5, get preemptive sucks because they didn't screen it. Mm-hmm. I said The Help kind of rocks. 30 minutes or less kind of sucks. Next week, we've got Conan the Barbarian, Fright Night, both of those in 3D, One Day, and Spy Kids All the Time in the World, which I think is also in 3D. I think it's in 4D, and I think it has, like, Smell-O-Vision.
Smell-O-Vision, yep.
Which my kids are like, we got to go see that. I'm like, I suppose we do.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyways, we're crowding up August with 3D movies, so yep. We'll see what happens. We'll see if that sort of bursts the bubble, if we get the correction down, and then people can actually start watching them for real reasons.
Yeah.
Anyways, Tim Buell, how do you find us? How do we find you?
How do you find us? You can find me over at the Golden Briefcase Podcast. New shows every week. I got quite a few new episodes coming your way with awesome guests. So be sure to check us out over at firstshowing.net. Hit the podcast button and there we are. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Tim Buell, TimBuell. Best place to find me.
Awesome. We will talk to you guys next week.
Take care.